Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Thank you, Dave. It's a vision of all that is jazz. Man, that gets more and more pertinent as every day goes by on this show, does it not? I'm just so tickled that everything has worked out so well with this show. And you know what? I have learned in doing this show every Tuesday and Thursday from 1 until 4 p.m. Eastern Time that things get fuzzy sometimes and that organic things happen. They have to happen because the best things in life happen organically. And with that, here's what I'm going to do. Diane Reeves is expected this hour, so I'm going to play a little taste of a song for you from I Remember, back in 1992, the year that my son was born. He turns 21 this Thursday. This is Diane Reeves. Hopefully she'll be with us momentarily on Hybrid Jazz. Welcome. Any idea how much of a pleasure it has been in the past few days to immerse myself in Diane Reeves music? Oh man, it was like my own Easter gift to me. Let me tell you something, it was so great. And then just in the past 24-48 hours, I got the word that Diane really was going to be on the show. So as if on cue, hearing the last strains of that glorious song, one of my favorites, Softly as in a Morning Sunrise, from I Remember back in 1992. This, I am proud to say to you, my friends, and all the supporters of Hybrid Jazz that have been with me since the very beginning, this is a light. This woman is a light who continues to enhance the lives of those who are with us and those who have gone before, multi-award-winning, an absolute liaison from the United States to the rest of the world, and I'm not kidding, and I'm not exaggerating by anything that I say about the miracle that is Diane Reeves. Diane, welcome.
Hi, how are you doing today?
I am doing great, and I am doing much better now that I hear the sunshine of your voice.
Well, let me tell you, after saying all that, I feel great today, too. Thank you.
You are so welcome. You know what? This is the truth. We certainly had some experiences over the weekend. My son came back from an extended stay in Florida and had some real church on Sunday in just gratitude that he was back safe and sound. And the words that keep occurring to me in regard to you is that you are an honorable woman. That's a miracle. You know that?
You think so?
Yes.
No. Well, thank you. I come from honorable women then. Thank you.
You do. And you couldn't help yourself, could you? The stock that you came from, such a musical family. Oh, my gosh, you almost had no choice, thank God, in life to take your path.
Well, thank you.
Oh,
thank
yeah.
You.
And how was that growing up? Your uncle, I love this, and no wonder you have such an association with orchestras, because your uncle was so involved with the Denver Orchestra, correct?
Yeah, he was a bassist for over 40 years with before he retired with the Denver Symphony, which is Colorado Symphony now. And I remember, after school, I would go over there and hang out with him during their rehearsal breaks. So I was kind of always in the mix with the orchestra, which was really nice.
And your mom played trumpet. I love that.
You know, my mother, it's funny. I said that it's funny how things just, when people hear them, they just grab onto them. It's, we haven't been able to get off of Wikipedia. It's everywhere. But my mother just played in a high school band. And I happened to mention that one time, and now they have her as this amazing trumpeter. But, you know, she ended up being a registered nurse.
But that's cool. I mean, you know what? It doesn't make any difference. My sister Jean played violin in high school, and that musicality followed her wherever she went. So
I can see that. Yeah, because at the end of the day, it's all healing, and it all speaks to the spirit and she chose something, you know, later on in life that did just that, that served her well. But in my family, I mean, I had great aunts and uncles, of course, George Duke, and, you know, just all of these amazing musicians that were in the family.
And George actually has been on the show. This has gone back a while. We've actually interviewed twice. And any time that your name gets mentioned, you can hear the smile on the phone.
Oh, he is so precious to me. I love my cousin so much because not only is he a great cousin, but he's a great friend. He's an amazing, impeccable musician. When
sure
you work
is.
With him, you just let go, and, you know, things happen, and it's really amazing.
Oh, and let us just say that you are always in good hands with George Duke, especially in your case, Diane, because 4 Grammy Awards, and if memory serves me, you are the only vocalist to have achieved those 4 Grammys consecutively, 2001, 2, 4, and 6, and George produced 2 of those albums.
Yeah, actually, he did 3 of them.
He did?
Yeah. He did 3, and the other one was from Good Night and Good Luck, the last.
Oh, I know. Mm-hmm. I've just been completely involved in that this morning. Okay. The Calling, Celebrating Sarah Vaughan.
Right.
A little, the Moonlight.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. The Moonlight, I'm sorry. He did 2 of them. You're absolutely right. I don't even remember. You know, the great Arif Martin did A Little Moonlight.
Right, okay. Yeah, Arif Martin really. and George.
Arif Martin is amazing, yeah, he is.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's been really nice. And right now I'm in the studio with my very dear friend, Terry Lynn Carrington, who won for Mosaic, you know, for her Mosaic album. She's producing
sure
this record. I've known her since she was 10, and we're having a good time in the studio.
I'm so glad to hear that because one of the many reasons why I appreciate you so much is that you are such a champion for other women. How important is that to you, Diane?
It's extremely important because there's so many women out there that are doing, that have always done magnificent things. And I love this new generation of artists because they're coming out strong, they're producing their records, they're writing their songs, and they're doing it all, you know. So they're playing beautifully, you know, not just piano, the drums and saxophone, guitar, just amazing. I love it. And so a lot of those really, really talented women are actually on my record, too.
And I know that. And you know what? I'm a few years older than you, and I remember a time when women were intimidated. It was just a situation where certainly it was a man's world, not only in jazz, but, you know, pretty much across the board. And to make yourself heard if you were going to do instrumental music or even vocalization, you had to really step up. And now, isn't it cool to see all these glorious females stepping up?
Oh, I love it. I love it because you're right. You had to fight. You know, even my generation, the generation before me, made a way for me to be there. But still, you know, there were still those stigmas of, you know, women in front of bands, the chick singer and all of that kind of stuff. And you know, you had to just disprove that and, you know, say, no, I'm not the chick singer. I'm actually the leader of the band, you know, and this is what I do. And I've always kept really great musicians around me and in my bands, and I've never had a backup band. And, you know, that all these young women that are coming out now, they're doing the same thing. I mean, I love Esperanza Spalding. She's just so amazing. And, you know, they're just out there and they're doing it.
Fearless, too. Man, it's so wonderful to see. And it's amusing. There was a post on Facebook the other day that suggested that for a long time you were considered crazy, especially if you were a female, but the crazy got confused with courage. So,
oh, yeah.
for women to really make sure that they push themselves through the crowd to say, look, I'm here, and I'm not going to be silenced anymore.
No. And I have other sisters who are around me who are here to help me stay lifted, which is really great because that's what's happening, and I love it.
I do, too, and I loved, I don't know if the project is going to continue or not, but you getting together with Liz Wright and Angelique Kidjo to make sure that Miriam Makeba and Odetta were triumphed.
Abby Lincoln, yeah.
Abby Lincoln, oh, my God. She is...
Yeah,
you
know, that whole project started out celebrating the music of Nina Simone. And we had such a great time, we thought we wanted to do it again. And actually, Nina Simone's daughter was in it the first time, and then she went to do some other things. So it was just the three of us, and we said, you know what, let's keep this going. And we have, and we come back, and in the last couple of years, we've been doing women songwriters. And, of course, the three that we just mentioned, you know, along with people like Joni Mitchell and Ani DeFranco and Tracy Chapman, our own songs that we've written. I mean, we're having a ball with us in the truth.
I love that. And is that what you like to do, Diane? What is it that you like to do? Because you can pretty much call the shots for your career at this point, I think. I mean,
I enjoy collaboration. I really enjoy collaborating with people. As a matter of fact, on this last record, I have a duet that I did that I can't wait for people to hear with Gregory Porter, who I think is just magnificent.
Yes!
You know, and so we did something together. And, you know, I just, and Layla Hathaway contributed beautifully to this record. Esperanza wrote a song for me that's really, really nice. So I'm really excited about it, you know. I love that this is in this time, you know, the record industry has changed a lot. And now you see a lot of people on each other's records. And I love that. I love that there is now this great spirit of collaboration.
I do too. And you and Terry Lynn, this struck me in doing a little bit of research. And sometimes you learn things as you go along, but sometimes you actually have to look for associations. I love that Terry Lynn has mentioned how significant Clark Terry has been to her. And Clark Terry was pivotal for you. You've had some real love, some helping hands along the way. You were in high school. I think you were 16, and you were playing.
Well, Clark Terry is actually, Clark Terry is how I met Terry.
Yes, that's what I thought.
He brought us together, at a festival. Clark always, when I met him at the what was then called the National Association of Jazz Educators in Chicago, at a convention, and he heard me, and he really loved what he was hearing. So I gave him my number and everything, and he said, I'm going to be in touch. I found out that he was in the Navy with my Uncle Charles, who was with the symphony. So they knew each other. So it's like, you know, less than 6 degrees of separation. And so anytime that I would go out and work with Clark, he would surround me with these amazing, I mean, just amazing musicians. And it was like the most fertile ground any singer, any musician could, young musician could hope to be a part of. And then one time we went to this festival in Wichita, Kansas, where I was going to open for Sarah Vaughan. And I was so excited because I had listened to Sarah's records, and there was this little girl on the drums. She was also a part of the band. And you could barely see her, but you could hear her. And she just played her butt off. I mean, it was just, I remember everybody running around her and, you know, they're like, who is this little girl? She's just so incredible. And that's how we met, through Clark. I mean, Buddy Rich was there, and he was trying to steal her.
I can imagine that because he was a rascal. I remember him, not that I ever met him, but got to be hanging in some circles, even when I was a little girl at Newport. He was playing at the Jazz Festival, so he was his cantankerous self, and that does not surprise me at all.
Oh, yeah, he was real. He was real, you know, 24/7. But, yeah, and so when I met her, we just stayed in touch and wrote back and forth. We were pen pals for many years. Our friendship really was through letter writing. And then I didn't see her again until she was 10. I didn't see her again until she was 18. And we've been friends. We've been hanging out and doing things ever since.
That's really wonderful. And so, okay, you're working on this. Can you give us a date as to when we can hear all of these?
Well, it looks like it'll be coming out in the fall. You know?
Okay.
So, you know, I'm thinking like around September or something like that.
Oh, my God.
Uh-huh.
That is going to be just monumental. And so is this event that you'll be part of on Friday, Diane Reeves with the Reading Symphony Orchestra. Woohoo!
Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to that.
That will be, and it's been discussed already, certainly in Baltimore and Washington circles here, Diane, that's one of the pivotal events for the Berks Jazz Festival right there.
Really? Well, I'm really looking forward to they're celebrating what is
100th.
They've been 100 years, yeah.
Wow.
So is amazing.
I remember when Berks just announced the schedule, the initial announcement, they were falling all over one another to announce you because this is monumental for Diane Reeves to be part of this Berks Jazz Festival. You can do what you want, and I would imagine that there will be people who will be coming not only from all over the states but all over the world to see this. So get ready.
Okay, I'm ready.
I'm
leaving on Thursday, and I'm ready to go. Yeah.
I am so excited that you're here, and I'm not going to keep you too much longer because I was told 30 minutes, and that's what I'm going to do. What has been one of the highlights of your career or some great moments for you that you wish that you maybe could go back in time and relive?
Oh, let's see. When I did the Olympics when they were in Utah, I guess it was 2001 Olympics in Utah. And then I think the other thing that I enjoyed was when I was creative chair for jazz for the LA Philharmonic, which was a position that was given to me. They give it to a lot of different artists. After me was Christian McBride, and now it's Herbie Hancock. So it's a great opportunity for artists to come and share their ideals and also have the opportunity to book the beautiful Disney Hall, as well as that big old Hollywood Bowl. So
wow.
It was amazing. I love that. I would love to do that again. That was great.
That's really interesting because I just read a couple of things about the Playboy Jazz Festival, and I see that George Duke and Al Jarreau are going to be playing there.
Ooh, it's going to be this festival this year. They have George Duke and Al Jarreau, they have Gregory Porter and India Ari. It's going to be an amazing festival.
And it will be the first time that George Lopez will be the host, which is a kick.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I wonder how Bill Cosby feels about that, because I just love him so much.
Well, he stepped down. You know, he was ready to step down from it. And so they celebrated him last year beautifully. And I guess he was just ready to go because they would have had him for as long as he wanted to, you know. But,
One of these days he'll be on the show and talk about his experiences, because what an ambassador he has been for jazz. Which leads me to this question for you, Diane. How do you perceive of yourself as a singer? If you had to call yourself something in the way of being the consummate professional and one of the most influential singers, seriously, in music these days, how would you classify yourself, or do you?
Because I love music. You know, I believe in music without boundaries. Yes. There's just so much out there. And I also believe that, you know, every day you can grow. You can find new ways and new things. And so I have a lot of courage, and I like to, you know, stand out on the edge. The edge is my friend. But in terms of giving myself some sort of, you know, a genre of music, I don't really like that. I like being able to sing the music that I want to sing.
Well, that has
in the
always
way that I want to.
Yeah, you sure have done a myriad of just that through the years. Just amazing international jaunts and being a goodwill ambassador, actually, from the United States to different countries. Some of the countries, the names I can't even pronounce. Your work is part of an enhancement of the career of Duke Ellington. That's been a big part of why I've loved you, because you have given new life to Duke Ellington.
Oh, thank you. I love Duke Ellington. As a matter of fact, I have to say this. I'm just her biggest fan, but Terry just did the Money Jungle.
Oh, yes.
Which is a celebration of Duke Ellington. And the thing that I love about it, I love all the music on it, but I love the Clark. It just, you know, blows it away on the record. I just love what he does on the record.
And how is his health, by the way? Let me ask you about that. Is he okay?
You know, he's not in the best of health, but his spirit is. You know,
that's great.
His spirit is the thing. You know, he has this amazing life force, and that's what keeps him moving forward. I mean, he's had a double amputee. He's a double amputee, and he can't see, but he still practices. He still plays. You call him, he's just, his mind is just right there, and he's just still teaching young people. He's
God bless
extraordinary.
Him. Wow,
mm-hmm.
Wow. That's a profile in courage, isn't it? Woo!
Yes, it is. Him and his wife, because it takes both of them. You know, she's just a really amazing person as well, Gwen Terry. But, I love him to death, and he gives me strength. He really inspires everybody that, you know, he talks to him, everybody that, you know, reads it. He has a book that he wrote that I couldn't even put it down. It was so amazing, his life story.
It's so nice to know that you have made these lifelong associations, because he met you when you were 16. And
yes.
Look at all this time. God bless. How many years have gone by, and he still thinks the world of you, you still think the world of him. It's like this extended family in the music business, and I can hear the love that you have in your voice for these different songs, Diane, and I think it's why all these folks have expressed such absolute passion about you being on the show today, and I thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I really appreciate you. This has been a wonderful interview.
Well, anytime you want to come back, I'm serious. And look, when that album is finished, you just march yourself right back to this phone number.
And you kept your 323 phone number. I noticed that.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
That will be yours to share. You just want to hang out. You want to
okay.
be by yourself. That's cool. You want to bring
uh-huh.
Terry Lynn. That's fine. I'll be happy to make sure that we just cover every single track if you want.
Cool. That would be lovely. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. And Dana is excited at Burke's Jazz that you're going to be there this Friday. There's going to be a packed house. Tickets are just phenomenally being sold. So, Diane, if I don't see you, and it's my mission to try to see you, it's the day after my son's 21st birthday, so we'll have to do some skedaddling. But you are going to be the crown jewel of that 2-week festival. So enjoy.
Aww.
Seriously, every single accolade that comes your way, take it and run with it.
Thank you, darling. You take care too, Miss Hennessy.
You too, Miss Reeves. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. Diane Reeves. Oh, such a pleasure. And I did. I did. I honored that 30-minute call-off. And listen, let me tell you something. We've got a call holding, and it's a 770 area code. But I just want to let you know that this is part of that multiple Grammy award-winning scenario right here. I have to play this song by Diane. It's one of the reasons why Good Night and Good Luck, the film, won a Grammy for Best Vocal Jazz Performance that year in 2005. This is a Duke Ellington song. It's called Solitude on Hybrid Jazz. And 770, we'll get to you momentarily.
In my solitude, you haunt me. Thank you.
do yourself a favor this week, will you? It's spring, and you need to get recharged in the way of your emotional and intellectual batteries. So you can kill two birds with one stone by doing this. Get a hold of the movie that was out a few years ago, Good Night and Good Luck. That was the George Clooney film. Let's essentially call it the George Clooney film, shall we? About the Edward R. Murrow story, especially in his fight against Joseph McCarthy, the crazy man who was anti-communist and called everyone so in the late 50s, early 60s. The soundtrack is absolutely delirious. It's got Diane Reeves singing on every track, and she has a stellar lineup of musicians, and I have to say hello to them. Peter Martin, Christoph Luthi, Jeff Hamilton, and Matt. Matt's got this unusual name, Matt Kittengub. These beautiful musicians that made Diane just feel comfortable, I'm supposing. She doesn't necessarily need any help in feeling comfortable, but every single track is a pleasure. All these jazz songs, and the movie is fantastic, so go do your thing. I'm going to do my thing right now. It's First Tuesday on Hybrid Jazz 770. You've been waiting for a while. Enter and sign in, please. Hello?
Hi, Trish. This is Adrian Blue calling in from Atlanta, Georgia.
Adrian, you called, our hometown hero in Baltimore, now living in Atlanta. How are you?
Trish, I'm excellent, doing great. Just enjoying the South, enjoying spring, and just having a great time.
I am so tickled, and I'm so tickled that you're going to be coming back home soon to do a show. Tell us.
Yes, yes. I'll be back in Baltimore the weekend of April the 13th. I'm going to be at the Terra Cafe at 101 East 25th Street. There are going to be two shows, one at 8 and one at 9:45. And I'm really excited about that. It's the theme of the show is Adrian Blue live and acoustic. And I'm really excited. It's going to be me on vocals and acoustic guitar with the phenomenal Carlos Brickhouse on acoustic guitar, as well as the phenomenal Mr. Rob White on percussion. So I'm really excited about that.
Do you know how much I love Carlos Brickhouse? I'll just confess my love right now.
You're a part of that crew too, huh?
Oh, my gosh. He is so phenomenal. He and a friend of mine, Dan Balog, who is now living in Nashville and doing well. Dan and Carlos were great friends. And Carlos has a heart as big as Montana.
Yes, yes, he does. Very, very well put.
Talent to boot. And listen, you know what? I did a little research on you, and I have to let folks know because you are so darn cute. I mean, you really are cute.
Oh, you're so gracious.
But seriously, no, you call yourself I've never heard anybody categorize themselves this way. Soul inspirational folk.
yeah. Soul inspirational. I combined all that. It's really interesting. I'm clearly eclectic, but I appreciate all of those genres. The soul in terms of the tradition of Sam Cooke, of Jackie Wilson, of Marvin Gaye, Ray Charles. But then the inspiration. You know, I grew up in church, so. You know, the Pentecostal church, so there's, you know, the inspirational part. But then the folk part, I'm just so into people like James Taylor, and then I go way back to John Phillips, incredible writer from the Mamas and Papas.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. I'm a huge John Phillips fan. And
oh, wow.
Yeah. Huge of that whole era. Peter, Paul, and Mary, that writing, that feel, the community sense of folk music. And then it's about the everydayness, you know, of what's going on, the heartbeat of the people. And so I just really just dove into that. And so you'll find all of that stuff, all of that in the music that I write and play. Yeah, yeah.
Baby, you're not eclectic. What you are is hybrid.
Wow. Wow, I'm writing that down. I'm sorry, baby, what you are is hybrid. I'm writing that down.
And it's so funny and not funny. It's it's kind of surreal to tell you this, but the song that I have that I'm going to play, I'm going to take another call after I talk to you, and I'm going to play an Adrian Blue song from Acoustic Truth. It's interesting to note that, first of all, you just said that you were raised in the Pentecostal church.
Right.
And so was Marvin Gaye, whose birthday is today.
Oh, Trish, you're so on it. Exactly. Amazing. Exactly.
And the song that's coming up reminded me of Marvin Gaye.
Absolutely. It's definitely my head nod to Marvin. Absolutely. Without question. Without denying. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh,
that is my inspiration.
Wow.
Absolutely.
That is so flipped out. I mean, of all days, First Tuesday lands on April the 2nd. Oh,
wow.
Gosh.
Right.
That is wild. Well, look, you know, I'm making it a big point. That weekend's going to be pretty busy in Baltimore and D.C. Some of us are going to make the rounds and check you out at Terra Cafe. I really want to see that place anyway.
It's a nice quaint community-based kind of vibe, very artsy, very homely feeling. It's really a great place. Great food as well.
Well, the owner, it's good to know so we can support places like this. The owner makes it a point to feed the homeless on a regular basis.
Yep, Terrence is committed to that. He's absolutely right. Absolutely.
So that bears mentioning. And God bless you. I'm so glad you called, Adrian.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Trish, for having me on. And just bless you for what you're doing and just how supportive you are of the arts and the music scene in Baltimore and beyond.
Thank you so much, Adrian. I'm making it a point to come and meet you.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. God bless you, and we'll see you soon.
Okay, sweetie.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Adrian Blue right there, and we're going to go to another call, 410 area code. How do I know? I have a feeling that I know who this is. Hello, 410.
Hey, Rhonda Robinson.
Yay, Rhonda Robinson. Yay, I'm so glad you called. How are you doing?
Good, good.
Hey, listen, were you the bunny that we saw at the Easter egg roll yesterday at the White House?
No. I was out of costume this year. I was a guide or handler for one of the characters.
Were you?
Mm-hmm. So I got to see everything, and it was wonderful, all the kids and their gorgeous Easter dresses and cute little suits, and they were just the cutest kids you've ever seen.
And the president made an appearance at the Easter egg roll, too, I see.
Yes, I got to hear him read Chicka Chicka Boom Boom.
I love it. That's great, Rhonda. You've got a big event coming up, and I want folks to hear because it's the celebration of Billie Holiday's birthday on the 7th, and you've got something special lined up.
Yes, that's right. On Sunday, April 7th is her actual birthday.
Yes.
Would have been her 98th birthday. And so Saturday night, April 6th at Andy Music in downtown Baltimore, 409 North Charles Street, at 8 o'clock and 9:30, we'll be having Billie Holiday's birthday bash.
Wow. Maybe,
some well-known and some lesser-known songs that she sang.
And who are the musicians that will accompany you? Because it's always important to note that, especially in Baltimore.
I've got just a great, great lineup. Darius Scott on piano.
Woohoo!
Joe Bussey on bass.
Wonderful.
And Robert Shaheed on drums.
Yes, that's great, Robert. We had a nice talk after the Todd Marcus George Colligan show, which was awesome. Rhonda, wasn't that an awesome show?
Oh, it was out of this world.
It truly was, with a lineup of people standing, waiting in line to get in for two shows. And Robert and I were talking about the state of jazz in Baltimore, and it's always a pleasure to talk to him because not only is he a person who champions jazz, but also one of the great drummers. Is he not?
Yes, yes. I am so looking forward to Saturday.
I'll bet you you are. That's great. And when you say lesser-known songs, that's intriguing. Give us a hint about that.
Well, when you research Billy's discography, there's, of course, certain songs that we all associate with her, but she actually recorded just about every song of the day, of her day. So there's hundreds of songs that, she sang that, could appropriately be put in a Billie Holiday set.
Yeah, yeah. Gosh, that's pretty crazy to think about it, how life-changing she was as far as music is concerned and how much she still affects people to this day. And I have to say, let me just address this. You are so funny, and it's so cool to have this perspective. Me having been born and raised in Philadelphia and coming to Baltimore, and everybody wants to claim Billie Holiday as their own. Billie was born in Philadelphia, and she left when she was a young teen to live with her mom's married sister in Baltimore. So, Rhonda, you and me are just going to have a fight about where she's from.
She's Baltimore.
See? Well, I'll just say Philadelphia. I'll just say she's got this Philadelphia-Baltimore connection. That's what I'll say until my last breath.
Okay.
Okay. And tell me again the time. It's going to be Saturday night, two shows, correct?
Yes. 8 o'clock and 9:30 p.m. at Andy Music, 409 North Charles Street. You can call for tickets, 410-385-2638.
And you can go to, and it's a tricky way of spelling, andiemusic.com has information there. So there.
Actually, it's andiemusiklive.com.
Oh, really? Okay, thank you for that clarification. Thank you. That's great.
AndyMusicLive.com.
Yes, thanks, Rhonda. It's going to be another packed house for you, for sure.
I sure hope so, because these are really some great songs, some of which you don't hear that much. So it's a be a rare opportunity to hear some great songs with this great lineup I have.
And are you going to be playing flute as well?
Probably not. Probably mostly concentrating on the singing.
Wow, that's so cool. All right. Well, hope to see you then, and thank you so much for calling. It's always a pleasure to hear your precious little voice.
I've got a couple other things this month.
Go ahead.
On Saturday, April the 20th, I won't be performing, but I will be a featured auction item for the silent auction. A two-hour jazz duo performance featuring me and a pianist for the Hot Night for Autism, which would be at the Timonium Fairlanes in Timonium.
That's
and
wonderful.
For information, you can go to itinerisbaltimore.org, itinerisbaltimore.org. That's a fundraiser for this group,
autism awareness.
Improves the lives of adults with autism.
That's absolutely wonderful. April is Autism Awareness Month, and folks will be seeing that on my Facebook page quite a bit. So what is your other event? That's great.
And in the regular every fourth Wednesday, Jazz Vespers at Holy Comforter Church.
Oh, good.
5513 York Road. So this month that's April 24th. At 7:30 p.m., and that's a beautiful evening service with prayers, chants, jazzy psalms, and jazz standards.
It's a beautiful time to go to because April seems to be the month for absolute renewal, and I can't think of a better way to celebrate. So good for you. I'm glad that Jazz Vespers program is still going on, Rhonda. That's great.
Yeah, it's been going on almost 3 years now.
And that's credit to you because you've been a real promotion and marketing person for that, and you really make the whole premise for having it come alive. So bless your heart.
Well, thank you, Trish.
You're welcome, and I'm glad you called, and I'll see you soon.
Okay, great.
All right, Rhonda.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Rhonda Robinson and Adrian Blue right before that, and I promised Adrian we were going to play this song. He sent me this little collection of songs, and I've known about Adrian Blue's name for a while, but I never got a chance to really hear him until he sent me these songs, and I was just enchanted. Adrian Blue and More, that's what the song is called, from Acoustic Truth on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Thank you.
This is Hybrid Jazz.
By the desolate dock, in the still and the chill of the night, I see the horizon, the great unknown. My heart has an ache, it's as heavy as stone. Will the dawn coming on make it light? I cover the waterfront. I'm watching the sea. Will the one I love be coming back to me?
Thank you to Rhonda Robinson for calling in to let us know about the big Baltimore tribute to Billie Holiday happening this Saturday night. Of course, Billie Holiday was born in Philadelphia, by the way, April 7th, 1915, and passed away July 17th, 1959. Interesting, a little while ago, just because I wanted to reread a bit about Billie Holiday, so much to take in. Oh, my. And considering that today is Marvin Gaye's birthday, we have a tendency, especially people in the United States, I think, to overwhelm ourselves with the sadness of how a genius has passed, rather than focus on the positivity that had been their lives. And with Billie Holiday, certainly, because there was so much sadness in her life, she is a miracle in that she surpassed the horrible scenario that was her early childhood and was able to influence thousands and thousands of not just women, but men as well, with what she did so well. The phrasing that she had, the absolute new ear that she brought to music, because her interpretation of song was built on instrumentation. So what she heard in the way of a saxophone or a bass line, she turned that around and made her voice sound like that. And then she soared. She complimented She copied. She became her own persona. There was no one like her. No one ever will be. That's amazing. That really is. And I Cover the Waterfront was a 1933 song inspired by Max Miller's 1932 bestseller novel of the same name. You can find that song on a number of different kinds of compilations, but I found mine on Canciones. So enjoy this whole week leading up to Billie Holiday's birthday. Do a little Billie each day and really revere the treasure that she left behind. And in case you want to be refreshed on this, if you saw the movie Malcolm X, Mickey Howard was Billie Holiday in the movie, and she did I Cover the Waterfront. Just a little trivia for you. We had Stanley Turrentine in the middle there. Just so beautiful, from 1961. Coming Your Way, the third album on Blue Note, Someone to Watch Over Me, the Gershwin song. You can also find that on Ballads, a bunch of songs that Stanley did beautifully in the 60s. And with him on the album, Tommy Turrentine on trumpet, yes, Horace Parlin on piano, Al Harewood on drums, George Tucker on bass. Just a beautiful interpretation of a song that is so beloved. Going out to Art Mosley today, because I know he's listening, bless his heart. Such a supporter of hybrid jazz. And I appreciate everybody who does the same. Griselda and Beach. Beach is usually the first one in the room now. I love it. She's been with me from the beginning, so has Griselda. Matt joining us today. Yolanda Bell, yay! And our guest, who will go nameless. Doesn't make any difference. Rhonda among them, Rhonda who called earlier. And a gentleman who said he was going to be calling last night on Facebook. I don't see him yet. So we'll slip on over to our next little bill of fare here and get to some more birthdays. Actually, I had not known that this gentleman was going to be celebrating a birthday until I looked ahead in the events on Facebook. And not only do we need to acknowledge the fact that he got a standing ovation the other day when he opened for Queen Latifah in his region of the world. Can you imagine getting your group together and playing in essentially your adopted hometown and having those folks, friends and family and fans and people who were there for Queen Latifah, getting up to honor you because you played so well? We already had one sax man in the mix just now. We'll have another one. Soon to be a birthday guy on April the 8th. This is a gentleman that we've had on the show, and it was a pleasure then, and it's a pleasure now. Mike MacArthur from his brand new album, Feels Like Home. This is the title track on Hyper Jazz. This is Hybrid Jazz.
It ain't just me, baby. Anger can make you old as you can. I said anger will make you stitcher. Anger destroys your soul. Rage, no room for rage. And there's no room in here. When it's a place to go to be mad, it's a sin to treat your body bad. When anger really gets the best of us, we've really lost our faith. Often say a lot of things. Oh, darling, wish we'd never
something by Marvelous Marvin Gaye. That's what we used to call him in Philadelphia, you know. Marvelous Marvin Gaye, born on this date, April 2nd, 1939, passed away far too soon at 44, April the 1st, 1984. From Here, My Dear, which got panned in many circles when it first came out in the late 70s because some say it was not commercial sounding enough. But here's the deal. That was a double-sided album in order to satisfy what was the crumbling marriage of Marvin to Anna Gordy. Marvin wasn't paying child support. They had to figure out a way for Marvin to make sure the money went to Anna, who was the sister of Barry Gordy. So they came up with this. Now, everybody now says Here, My Dear was so splendid because it was raw Marvin. He loved Anna, but their marriage was over. He was involved with Janice, had two kids by Janice. So what you were hearing, sometimes his voice actually failed him because there was such emotion involved in these tracks. They're really tough to hear, but you got to get a hold of the album to feel out a little bit of what he was going through. Big, long story involved in that, but doesn't take away from the fact that we celebrate the fact that Marvin Gaye was alive and well in the time that we were breathing. And man, were we breathing in some music. Just incredible. Anger, the name of that. Horace Silver, Kathy, from In Pursuit of the 27th Man from 1973. Gotta honor these living legends. Horace Silver is 84, still with us. His HoraceSilver.com website is kicking, and you have to get the book, Let's Get to the Nitty Gritty, that is an autobiography. Lots to say about that. Mike MacArthur started the set. Got to tell you about this before we get to an important call. 818 area code. Yes, indeed. Joey Somerville coming up at the top of next hour. It must be a trumpet day. I don't know what the heck is going on. But let us tell you this about Adrian Blue. We played a track, More, from his Acoustic Truths project. You can get that via iTunes, Amazon, and Spotify. And we'll be talking more about his April 13th live and acoustic set at Terra Cafe. But first, we have to get to a gentleman that our good friend SoCal Gal Beach says in California. What does she call him? Let me go back to see what she calls our guest who's waiting in the wings. Let me see if I can find it. She has a name for you, Greg. Oh, my God. Well, suffice it to say that there is a lot of love for this gentleman on the phone. And not only is he a trumpet meister, one of the best in the world, but also the consummate storyteller. And we love him for all of that and more. And making friends with the right people and paving the way for so many that came after the one and only legendary Greg Adams. Greg.
Hi, Trish.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
You called. Oh, we're so sorry to hassle you about calling.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was just on the phone. I was trying to put out a fire on something else, and I guess got out of hand. And so I'm sorry I'm late.
Oh, listen! Don't you ever apologize. We're just thrilled to have you because I'm so tickled that every time I tune into the East Bay Soul or Greg Adams page, if you get bored there, something's wrong with you. You've always got something happening.
Yeah, you know, we try to keep it updated and fresh, and I was just saying to Andrea yesterday, a lot of people just put the thing up and it just kind of sits there, and then you wonder why nobody goes to it. So, you know, she puts pictures from gigs and sessions and, you know, just kind of keep it breathing, you know, and I think that really helps a lot because we get a lot of traffic. So it's cool, you know, and I it's fun to even for me to kind of look at it. I mean, I go, oh, yeah, that's right. That was a great gig, you know, and stuff like that. So, you know, kind of keep people in the loop.
Oh, you have to, because actually between the website and your Facebook pages, these are actually the new business cards that we share these days.
That's right,
you know?
That's right. Uh-huh. And making a CD is the world's most expensive business card.
Oh, my gracious, is it ever. You can attest to that because you've had a couple of Kickstarter projects that were successful, but even to get that, I mean, even when you are asking people for help, and who doesn't need the help these days unless you're independently wealthy?
Yeah, well, that I'm not. And, you know, it's kind of funny because, I talk to people about this all the time. You know, years ago, and not that long ago, it was pretty hard to do an independent record, you know. And now with the advent of Kickstarter and just, you know, the major labels kind of are like, you know, they're almost irrelevant unless you're like, you know, Coldplay or you know, the big, huge rock acts, you know. So it's facilitated us to be able to do what we're doing now a lot easier than it was just even 10 years ago, you know. So it's kind of funny, and we just saw on the news or heard on the news yesterday that now Warner Brothers is going to go to Kickstarter. You believe that?
What?
Yeah. It's kind of like it sounds like a scam to me. I mean, they're going to get the artists to raise all the money, then they'll sign them if they get to $100,000. Thanks a lot.
Oh, my God, that is too funny. You know what that's like? I don't know if this is a trend happening where you are in California, but I get the biggest charge out of this at some of the venues that we heard of in the Mid-Atlantic region. The venue says to the local or regional artist, look, if you get people calling ahead of time, we'll determine from how many calls if you're worthy for us to book.
You believe it.
I mean, wow!
You know, and the thing is like, and, you know, when people act like that, they're scared, you know, and it's because people have the wherewithal to become independent, you know, and they see that, oh, we got to get in on this, and it just kind of smacks of desperation in me sometimes. I don't know. You know, I can be real cynical, but, you know, it just kind of seems like, you know, can't the independent guy be independent and try to forge his own way? And it's like they got to horn in on the action. It's kind of like, you know, what do they do? You know, like neighborhood gangs, they hit up people for, you know, insurance so nobody, you know, sets fire to their business. You know, it's called gangsters.
That's
you know,
right.
So,
that's right.
You know, it's kind of, it's at all levels of business, I guess they're out there. You got to keep, you know, vigilant and don't succumb to it. But you know, whatever it's the music business. It's a tough battle. It's a tough one to be in. You know, and I've been in it for 45 years now, and you know, it's a tough one, but it can be very satisfying, and it has been satisfying to me. So I enjoy it. You know, like they say. If you can make a living at something you really love, then it's not work.
Well, you know what, Greg, you raise an interesting point, though, and thank God that you've been blessed so much in your career. I mean, a monumental kind of career. But what you've just said about Warner Brothers and Kickstarter, it smacks of further disrespect to musicians. And this just, I mean, I clutch my throat about this all the time. You know, we see these different posts get passed around on Facebook, and some of them are hilarious, but in the hilarity, there's also tragedy. There was actually something on Craigslist that somebody made sure everybody saw, which essentially is this. There was a job opportunity, in quotes. The opportunity was this. These folks at a venue were asking musicians to come and play for free initially, and if we see that you have a response, we'll start to pay you. So you play for free, and then we'll see how it goes. So the guy who was responding to the ad turned it around and said, hey, look, I read your ad, and I'm really interested in your venue. Mm-hmm. How about if you come and cook for me for a few weeks for free, and I'll see if the food's good, and then I'll start paying you.
Yeah, exactly. I saw that, and that's so so timely. You know, I think who's a real cynic, and I wouldn't put it past him. He's a good friend, Leland Sklar, the bass player who plays with.
I love him.
Yeah. The bearded wonder. He you see his posts on Facebook. I'll tell you, he'll get right in your face if you you're doing the right thing. So, I mean, that sounds like something Lee would do, because it's just the cynicism of the whole thing is just, it stinks, you know. But, you know, it's like I said, you know, it's a tough business. But, you know, if you can be as fortunate as I have been and to have worked with so many people that I've worked with, then, you know, it's very rewarding. You know, sometimes there's slow months. Sometimes there's months that you wish you could have a day off. But that's, you know, that's just the way it is. You know, when you're in business for yourself, it's like, you know, you go with what comes. And you know, I'm not on salary. I have to find I'm my own boss. You know, so it's interesting. You know,
and that can be. You know, for how however satisfying it is to be working on your own, you also know that in the beautiful free time that you have, you also have to make that other time count in the way of making money, and that can be challenging. But it's funny, Greg, the last time you were on the show, or maybe the time before, we were talking about a particular kind of subject, and I am so amused and so gratified to see that Greg Adams is now being embraced by a whole new group of people, and you know what I'm talking about. I have seen you all of a sudden become the darling you were to so many of us, but now people are actually realizing how incredible an artist you have been and continue to be. So you've been really busy behind closed doors, haven't you?
Well, yeah, you know, it's kind of, we're lining up some dates for East Bay Soul in the summer, but I've been in the studio. Big project I just finished was Dave Koz's new record, and it's a real interesting concept because it's called Summer Horns, and they're doing a tour with it. I think the album comes out in May, maybe late April, and it's basically Dave and Mindy Hebert, Richard Elliott, and Gerald Albright. Paul Brown produced it, and I did five arrangements on the for the horns, and Lee Thornburg and I played on it a couple of tracks. But the first song we did, and the ironic thing about it was their first day in the studio, and meeting to play the four of them, we cut the single, the first big single for Tower of Power, So Very Hard to Go, and did a remake of it.
Wow.
And they wanted my original arrangement, so I went to the rhythm tracking session, and we did it just like the band did it in 1974. And then the horns got together, and they said, do it just like, you can't change it. It's a classic arrangement, which I was very flattered that they said that. And so I rewrote it, and that was the first thing they had, all four of them had met to play, and it just was magic. And when it gets to the flugelhorn solo, which I played on the original, they said, well, we can't change that solo, so write it out and we'll play it. So I wrote out my solo and they played it in unison.
Well,
and then as the cherry on top of the banana split, as it were, Michael McDonald sang it.
Here.
Yeah, so it's deep. I mean, I heard the final mix of it a couple of weeks ago. I was like, oh my god. So that was real interesting. And the whole thing is, it's like covers of great horn band songs. So they did So Very Hard to Go by Tower of Power, Earth, Wind and Fire, Got to Get You in My Life. What else? Hot Fun in the Summertime by Sly Stone.
Oh my god.
Reasons by Earth, Wind and Fire.
Whoa.
Jeffrey Osborne sang that. And,
did he really?
Yeah, so it's power packed. I mean, it's a huge musical album. I mean, I think it should do very well, and I know Dave was just thrilled about it, and he should be, man. It's a great outing. Paul Brown did a great job producing, so anyway, that's one of the big things that I just come off of. And
oh, Greg.
And I'm still in the midst of producing an EP on the original singer with Tower of Power on the first record, East Bay Grease. His name is Rufus Miller. And,
oh, yes.
I mean, he's been gone for 40 years. And so we're in the studio with him, and it's kind of funny. He came to me and asked me to do this because he's been following my career for many years, and he really likes what I do on my recording career and all that kind of stuff and performance, and he's come to see the band even unbeknownst to me, just kind of lurking in the shadows and not coming up and saying hi. So he came to me and said, I want to do this just like you. I want to do it in the studio you use, the same engineer. I want to use your band. So it's basically East Bay Soul backing up Rufus Miller on this four songs that we're doing. And I'm just going to go in the studio with him and cut the vocals in the next couple of weeks and mix, and he's going to put it out on his own nickel and see what happens. It's
oh,
interesting.
Wow.
You know, I haven't seen him he left the band shortly after the first record. So it's been 40 years. And so it was kind of a strange yet interesting but very musical outing. I mean, the tracks, he wrote the songs, and my guys are on them, and they came out really swampy and kind of, I don't know, just really down blues Memphis type thing. It's pretty cool stuff.
I love it. And you know, it just seems that there is this, for lack of a better expression, coming together of some really interesting minds and reunions of sort. I mean, I just smell different kinds of people getting together that haven't been together for a while, that really didn't know about another faction of jazz in the area coming together. I see it regionally here in Baltimore, D.C., Philly. I feel it happening in other parts of the country and the world. There just seems to be real unique and special combinations of people making music together.
Yeah, it can be very real. You know, sometimes the chemistry works, sometimes it doesn't, but when it works, it's pretty cool, you know, and that's the beauty of being able to play and record with a lot of other people. Like, I've been so fortunate to do that because it keeps my mind way open and fresh, and then you never know what the next project's going to bring or demand of you, and what style you're going to have to write in, you know. So it was kind of funny, the other day I got a call to do some a five-piece chamber brass quintet type stuff, and you know, I haven't played that style of music since I was a kid. And if you don't go there, you lose it pretty quick. So I'm really a jazz trumpet player. You know, I'm not a classical guy anymore. And as my jazz playing started to take the forefront, the old saying, use it or lose it. So I had to tell the guy who was calling me to contract me, I said, here, let me give you a number of a young guy who I know plays this kind of stuff all the time, because I'm not your guy, you know. But, you know, I'm into different arenas all the time as far as styles of music, and it's always a lot of fun. I'm going to do some big band work later this month, which is I have a catalog of about five or six pieces, but this one's going to be done. It's kind of very interesting. Al Schmidt, the legendary engineer and producer, he's going to do this. We're going to do it at Capital A in Hollywood, which is where Sinatra and Judy Garland and Nat King Cole all recorded their hits.
That's beautiful.
Oh, yeah, it's a legendary room. And we're going to record the big band live. And it's funny, it's for a software app that's going to go in some kind of a video game. I'm not sure, but it's always great to you know, the sound of a big band heard live is just wow. And we'll get it on tape with Al Schmidt recording it. It'll be stellar. So I'm really looking forward to that. That's kind of a beautiful thing.
That's cool. Well, you know, Diane Reeves was here at the top of the show, and it was wonderful to spend 30 minutes with her or so. And, you know, in asking her this question, Diane, how do you view yourself? What kind of a singer do you view? She said, you know, you have to dip into everything. You have to make sure that across the board, your voice is heard by different kinds of people. So, Greg, you say that you're a jazz trumpeter, but, I mean, you've really been involved in soul and funk and all sorts of things through the years. Would you turn anything down at this point?
No, like I said, probably a chamber group. I wouldn't fit in very
okay,
well, but, you know,
yeah.
I do everything, you know. I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, I've played in all those different theaters and you know, and I think that's what, as in playing and in writing, that's what's kept me kind of fresh and aware and kind of a finger on the pulse, you know, I'm capable of wearing different hats, you know. I can become a chameleon pretty easily, you know, especially in writing. You know, it's that's what is always been the challenge to me is to work with an artist that is looking for what I bring to the recording, but yet doing it and customizing it to what their style is, you know, whether it's Annie Lennox or Dionne Warwick, you know, the complete both ends of the spectrum. I've worked with them and I've given them what they wanted, and it's been that's rewarding to me. It's like, you know, when they have a smile on their face at the end of the session, you know, it went right, you know.
Well, look, the truth of the matter is too, when one is highly visible, you're friends with Paul Schaefer on the Letterman show. Even though you're good friends with Paul Schaefer, Paul wouldn't have brought you in to the Letterman show to work on an every night basis. You are so across the board. You're so adept. You're so sensitive to what other people need in the way of what they hear, that you were there for the whole week. And to me, that meant everything. I was seeing my friend Greg Adams, highly visible each night, someplace where you belong. You belong as a band leader, but everybody got to hear you. Folks who wouldn't necessarily have heard you in another arena. So you really had a chance to shine. And
well,
that's what I want to see more of with you.
Yeah, you know, and it was a great, that week doing the show, it was great because Dave and Paul both held up the East Bay Soul 2.0 CD on camera, and that, you know, well, you know what that's worth. And it was very, very nice of them to do that, you know. And while they, you know, I'm not the profile trumpet player that they look for because they want a screamer, you know, a high note guy. And like I said, I'm a jazz player. I play inside the staff, not above the staff. So, and, you know, it was great. I was flattered that Paul asked me to come back for the week, and it's always good to see him. And I hadn't seen him and the band for quite a while. And so it was a lot of fun. I did some more arranging for the band. And originally I did the all the horn charts for the band when they were still on NBC, because Tower Horns, we would go on for, you know, a few nights a week when we were playing the Bottom Line in New York City. And of course, they'd tape the show at 4:30 in the afternoon. So we would go right from NBC right down to the village to the club and play the show that night. So that kind of helped build the book. And then when they went to CBS, they had the budget to add a horn section. So they've had the horn section, and it's a great band, a bunch of great guys. Most of them I've known, especially the originals, Will and Anton and Sid and Paul. They were the core, the quartet, and then they added all the other people. So it's a great opportunity. And you know, speaking of the East Coast, you know, I'm going to be back there let me see. I'm just looking at my
look at those dates, please.
Well, I'm not supposed to tell you.
But
we're going to be in Colton Point, Maryland on Saturday, July 13th for the Potomac Seafood and Jazz Festival.
You really are? Oh, my God, that's great.
That's near you, huh?
Are you kidding? It's not exactly next door, but it's close enough where I'm getting my arson gear and coming to see you.
Great. Yeah, we've been in talks with them for a while. It's been balls going back and forth in the court, and we finally were there, and we're going to be in Lancaster, Pennsylvania on July 14th.
Wait a minute,
and,
I'm losing you. You're getting fuzzy now.
And how's that? Is that better?
That's better, yes.
Okay.
You're going to be in Lancaster, you say?
Yeah, on July 14th at the Longs Park Summer Music Series.
Oh,
and,
wow.
But, you know, we're starting off, we're going to do two nights, June 7th and 8th in Spagatini and Seal Beach, California.
Woo-hoo!
And then we do we go back to Wichita, Kansas for the Bradley Fair on the 13th of July. I mean June, I'm sorry. And then Overland Park, Kansas, it's in Kansas City. And then we're going to go into Denver for the first time in a long time. And first time for East Bay Soul, we're playing this club called the Soiled Dove. That's
yes.
Yeah, and then we go to Yoshi's Oakland, and we're all over this place. And then we're going to hit Burnsville, Minnesota, which is just outside of Minneapolis on August 17th. And all the shows were headlining, so that's always good news to us, you know. And then we're back on the West Coast, during the holidays, we're going to do the Christmas show again, and hopefully
Great.
Run it up the West Coast, Seattle, Portland, you know, San Diego just hit all the spots. We did real well with it last year. So while it's a couple of months away, it's just around the corner. Time flies, you know. And so,
oh, definitely.
Yeah, so we're looking forward to that, getting on the road again. We always do so well. Once people hear the band play, they tell their friends, and we get a bigger crowd every time we come back. So it's been good. And then, you know, I'm going to have to start thinking about the third East Bay Soul record.
Yay.
So we're starting to write just a little bit. Nick Milo and I got together on Saturday. He played me a couple of things. He just left yesterday with Joe Cocker for Europe for like 2.5 months. So he's Joe's musical director. But Nick and I are old Tower Power bandmates, and we've written together for years. So we always have a great chemistry when it comes to writing. So it's always it's great to write with him. So, but I'm staying real busy and.
I hear.
Yeah. So I guess I'll see you at Colton Point.
Yes, you certainly will. And as far as you saying that you're headlining for these gigs, let me just say, and Beach, of course, is echoing this in the chat room, and the chat room is alive and well today. Let us just remind you.
Wow,
listen, if anybody was to follow East Bay Soul on stage, I would feel so badly for them because after you're finished tearing the stage up, what is there left? I had a pivotal moment some years ago when I saw an internationally known artist follow Pieces of a Dream. Uh-huh. It was bad news for the internationally known artist because suddenly people were forgetting his name because they just saw the show.
Uh-huh.
You... Uh-huh. Are the show. After seeing you at Ram's Head in an intimate setting in Annapolis, Maryland, and people on the streets saying, "Who is playing in this club tonight?" It was just crazy. It was a packed room, and there's nobody, Greg, that's going to be able to follow the stage after you.
Well, you know, that's a really nice thing to say, and the intensity of 10 guys up on the stage, sure. And once we get rolling, it's just like it's a train patrol running downhill, you know. So,
seriously.
You know, it's a lot of music, we have our tender moments, but for the most part, it's pretty much in your face R&B, you know, funk and all kinds of stuff, you know, thrown in there. And this band won't be denied, you know, once we get up there and going. And it's funny, we just keep building our following and building and building. And for years, I've done this one festival in Overland Park, Kansas, which is just outside of Kansas City. And the first year we played it, we opened, and it was kind of a funky little festival, maybe 2,000 people. And over the years, this will be the third time that we played it, and last time it wasn't East Bay Soul, it was just my 7-piece band, and we opened for the Fabulous Thunderbirds, and so this time we're going back to headline, and the festival has grown to about 5,000-6,000 people now, full on blown production and the whole thing. And this promoter Bill Flores, he really has believed in me over the years, and he just loves East Bay Soul, he loves the record, so here we go. We're going to play this big show, you know, and it's going to be great, I think. The crowd is just a great audience, and, you know, it just works out real good. So we're looking forward to that, you know, and the future is bright. You know, we can feel the economy coming back slowly, but, you know, things are, you know, I'm working more. People are working more. You hear carpenters in the neighborhood. People are driving a new car once in a while, a little bit more than they used to. So, you know, it looks like we're on the mend, as they say. So that looks good for the future for everybody. So,
absolutely, absolutely. And it's just, it really is the truth. The momentum has struck, and it's just building and building. You can feel it, too. The excitement in your voice is just a whole different kind of excitement from last time. You know it's true, and mm-hmm. and we're going to see you. We'll see you out and about. We're bringing a whole van full of people. If you're going to headline that show at the Potomac Jazz and what is it? It's Potomac Jazz and what festival?
Yeah, Potomac C Seafood and Jazz Festival.
Seafood and Jazz. Look, if you are going to eat and hear jazz, this is the place, because they're going to have the best seafood in the world right there that day.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, it's they say it's a really nice festival. It's not a real big one, so it's like, you know, it's not a bad seat in the house. And, of course, you know, the seafood on the East Coast is great. And I guess they'll have some crabs, right? Maryland crabs.
Crabs. And whatever else that they can have there, because that's the talk of the state when that festival rolls in. Yeah.
Oh, well, great. That's great. I know that Andrew was telling me that Jesse J is on it and somebody else. But, you know, I'm not supposed to announce it, so. You didn't hear it here.
Okay, Greg. Well, definitely see you.
I'll deny if anybody accuses me.
Right, and I won't say a word.
Yeah, okay,
I won't say a word. Okay. Thank you, Greg, so much for stopping by. I appreciate your time. God bless you.
You bet, Trish. Great talking to you, and I'll see you soon.
Very good. Thank you so much.
See you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Greg Adams, oh, that is so funny. Let's just get to it, shall we? Let's play The Getaway from East Bay Soul. Oh, what a great day to be alive. It's springtime. Let's get it on and on, shall we? On Hyper Jazz, this is Joey Somerville.
Thank you.
I have to tell you in all honesty, the chat room, and it is plentiful today, the chat room is doing collective chair dancing. No joke. It has been something else to see folks moving and grooving and saying so in the chat room. It is crazy. Joey Somerville right there. I started that song, and I thought, okay, he's going to be here momentarily. As soon as I started the song, I saw the phone light up. So he has been enjoying his own music, which he should for sure, on and on. Ladies and gentlemen, the chairman of the board of the Get Down Club, trumpeter extraordinaire and the consummate businessman, Joey Somerville. Hey, Joey.
Hey, Trish, how you doing?
I am doing a whole lot better. You know, it's really funny. I knew that you were going to be on time, and I thought, okay, if I time this really well, maybe I'll get to him right at the beginning of the song. As soon as I put that song on, there you were.
I try to be punctual. That's one of my things. I don't like being late for pretty much anything.
Oh, well, look, that has served you well because you are doing really well. The whole basis of this is I'm so tickled that you're going to be at Burke's Jazz. Please tell us.
Oh, yeah, I'm excited. It's one of those festivals that everybody's been telling me, you should play Burke's. You should play Burke's. I'm like, yes, I'd like to, but they have to ask me. I can't just show up. And they were kind enough to call this year and say, hey, can you come? I'm like, well, let me think about it. Yes, yeah, I get there. So I'm excited. Yeah, it's going to be fun. It's incredibly, incredible festival. Legendary festival. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. My goodness, if I was making a commission for Burke's Jazz today, I'd be cleaning up because Diane Reeves was here in the first hour, and you're here, and there's a myriad of folks who will be at this two-week festival. But there are some events, Joey, that are getting more buzz than others. And the fact of the matter is, you are playing with Lee Ritenour, and you get the best of one instrument and the best of another. That's pretty lethal.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate the kind words. Yeah, I have I'm a fan of Mr. Ritenour's work for years and years and years, and it's one of the perks at this at this point for me is that I get to play with and see and hang out with and talk to guys that I just sort of idolized growing up, and they were I tell them you guys weren't even real people because this is before there was blog talk radio and the internet and you could get video of this person and that person on demand. Those guys were just like mythical creatures. They were, I think I make some of them uncomfortable when I talk about them like that. But it's true. I mean, Ronnie Laws is one of my superheroes, and I get to work with him, pretty often. And I told him, it's like you were just this guy, this concept. We had a picture, a 12x12 picture of you, and a piece of plastic that you put on, and you put it on, you drop the needle, and the record played, and this magical music came out, and there was no backstory to be told. There was no,
yes.
You couldn't look up to find out who Ronnie Laws was or what he was like. It was just the music and a picture, if you were lucky. And then, half of the covers, didn't have his picture on it. I mean, they were designs and what have you. And now at this point I get to, hang out and play music with and just commune and do art with these, my superhero, legendary superhero people. So
Joey, you raise an interesting point because back in the day we didn't have all this social media or feeding frenzy for the life story of all of these cats and kitties that we were listening to. So it was more of a mystery thing that we didn't really know about their background. All we knew is that we had vinyl, we were playing it, and we were taken away, completely captivated.
Exactly. And I think there's something to be said for those artists because there's magic in the fact that you were taken away by the music. It was strictly the music. That's what made it happen for you, period. It wasn't about the visuals or the video or the backstory or, you know, anything
That's
like that.
Right.
It was just the music, just the music. And the music had enough power to take you away. And, you know, and when you hear somebody like Ronnie Laws or Lee Ritenour or an Earl Klugh or any of, you know, or Jeff Lorber or any of these people that were doing that back then, when you experience them now, they still have that ability to take you there musically and transport you. And it matters not how young, old, tall, whatever outfit they got on. Nobody cares. They got that music, man. And they take you there strictly with the music.
Oh, my God, this could be a two-hour show if we were to talk about this because, you know, the subject for discussion frequently within music circles is the fact that some of these younger ones don't understand, and actually it's not their responsibility to understand what should be happening is with these record industry types. They should be grooming them for greatness rather than putting them out there half-baked just because they look good or because they can play a few notes on a guitar or a keyboard doesn't make you an artist. It makes you a promotional tool.
Yes. I mean, and that's by and large what, you know, what's happened to the industry to an extent. You know, it's just a function of it's dollars and cents. It's the bottom line is dollars and cents, and it's marketing that allows people to, you know, to do the things that they do.
Yeah, it's it really is pretty amazing, and I'm thinking of names right now, and they will go nameless, but you know. What happened?
Let me start. No, I'm just kidding. So, you know, it's a function of. I mean, that's just it's just a function of the way the world is in the moment, and that is what it is. And you play the hand that's dealt, and maybe some of those people who have gotten in the door early, maybe they'll grow into great artists. Who knows? I'm not gonna say that they won't. But back in the day, and I don't want to sound, you know, archaic or whatever, but back in the day, you couldn't even get inside a recording studio unless you were a really good player.
Exactly.
And now you can make, you know, you got a laptop, make a record, kid. Go for it. And there's an upside and a downside to that. The upside is that, you know, art is more readily the ability to make art is more readily accessible. That's a good thing. The downside is the ability to make art is more readily accessible, and that's a bad thing as well.
Yes. Well, and this needs to get mentioned. Kendrick Scott was on the show last week, one of the premier drummers now that we have in jazz, and one of the wonderful situations that he was blessed to have had through the past several years was that he got to work with Terrence Blanchard. So Terrence told him that Kendrick needed to put out an initial package, a CD, because it would reflect where he was at that moment. Doesn't mean that he wasn't going to change, doesn't mean that he wasn't going to get better, but he wanted Kendrick to put something out to reflect the kind of artist that he was at that moment. Now, that being said, Terrence knew that there was greatness in Kendrick. The thing is, if you have a mentor who knows that you're great, you're great at that moment, you're just going to get greater. With some of these kids that are starting out, they're getting into trouble now because they realize that they were pushed prematurely into a world that expected them to be better than they are. Not saying they're not, you know, not saying they're not making money because they are, but when the reality hits that people are laughing at you and you're not as good as you thought you were, that's
uncomfortable. I can imagine that being an uncomfortable place. I understand that from an intellectual perspective. I was fortunate enough to come up under a great number of mentors and really good players, and you know, did my time in the trenches, and
it
has served me well. In that, you know, it's pretty. There's a lot to be learned from your elders, and I had sense enough to shut up and listen for a great number. And I mean, I remember being in the dressing room with one of my major mentors was a guy named Big Joe Burrell, who was a seasoned tenor saxophonist and vocalist. He worked with Count Basie and B.B. King, amongst others. And he was, significantly older than me. I mean, he was, 40 years older than me, at least. I mean, he was probably 60 when I was in my 20s.
Wow.
And so, but he had been around the block 700 times and had a lot of wisdom to share. So I remember being in the dress room just in between sets or whatever, or on the ride to the gig, just listening to his stories and listening to him talk. And there are things that he would say that were just nuggets and pearls of wisdom. And I just put it in my notebook, my mental notebook, and I've never forgotten some of the things that he told me, I still to this day use them every time I get on stage or go in the studio for that matter. I mean, some of the most valuable lessons that I ever learned came from just shutting up and listening in the dressing room or backstage or, on the ride to a gig, just.
But that's
a
blessing.
Yeah.
You humbled yourself enough to listen. And let us say that humility came honestly because your biggest teacher, correct me if I'm wrong, was the Baptist Church, Joey Somerville.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's and it's funny because I've had this conversation with people a lot about what it really is that we do. And as musicians, we're shaman, if you will, or metaphysicist, and we bring this music out that transcends concrete, tangible kinds of stuff. You can't like put it in a bottle. It just is. And the notes, you look at sheet music and it's just notes on a page. It means nothing until you animate it and bring it to life. And you can play it one way, or you can play it like you mean it and really communicate, and you can, it's what I call soul communication. And
that
same thing happens, that the reason that it served me was that it's the same thing that happens in a religious service, in a church congregation, where, people, lose it and get happy and they get the spirit. The same thing happens, at a jazz festival or in a club or on a concert stage, when you're making that music do the thing that it does, the soul communication thing, that where it allows you to conjure up this spiritual energy that makes people go crazy. I mean,
yeah.
And I mean go crazy in a good way.
Oh, definitely. Oh my gosh.
And
yeah.
The energy is the same. You see people going off and having in a sanctified church, just going berserk and jumping around, and then you see people at a show going berserk and jumping around because that feeling has come over them and taken over their bodies and their minds, and they're transfixed by this music. The spirit has descended upon the building, and
it's a natural high.
Yeah, on a natural high, and it's the same thing.
Yep. It's like it's soul communication. I love the way you put that. It's also like this hotline to God. Nobody can take away the joy that you feel. It's something so personal that it's why it's so miraculous that if you are in a group of people and you're playing your trumpet, and somebody from South Africa is there, somebody from France is there, somebody from Colombia is there, and Ireland. Everybody speaks a different language, but everybody feels the same song.
Exactly. It doesn't. I mean, music is the international language. It transcends all boundaries. I've been on both ends of it. I was in Germany back in November, and I was playing for people from all over Europe, and they were from Austria. This was in Germany, but they had come from Austria, Poland, France, Sweden, the UK, on and on and on. Half the people didn't speak English, or their English was rudimentary at best. It didn't matter. They all had a great time, and they all understood it musically. And on the other side of it, for me, one of the best shows that I've ever been to was there's an artist named Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan, who was a Qawwali prayer singer. And I saw him. I had a friend who was an ethnomusicologist of the highest order, in academia, but in his trailer. He lived in a mobile home up on the side of a mountain, but his mobile home was filled with albums and cassettes. I mean, he had that's what he lived, breathed, and slept, music. And he says, "You got to hear this guy." And he played it. He says, "He's coming to Montreal. We got to go see him." I said, "Okay, we're going to Montreal." So we went up to Montreal. I was living in New England at the time. I didn't go from Atlanta to Montreal. But we went up to see Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan in a cathedral in Montreal. And it was incredible. The guy, he probably weighed 400 pounds. Didn't need a microphone. Filled up the cathedral. It was he had a group. It was Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan and the Party. And there were 8 to 10 guys, and that's what they were his backup band, but there were guys with harmoniums and tablas and some background singers. And the music that he does is religious music in their tradition. And there were people there who understood what he was saying. I didn't understand a word. I had no idea. Well, actually, I did have an idea just because of the feeling. I mean, it was just like I was caught up, and it was just an incredible experience. Didn't understand a word the man said, and it didn't matter. It was a great, great concert. Great concert.
And you remember that. What year was that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
That's
going back. Late 80s, early 90s.
So over 21 years ago. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah, it's been a good 20 years. Yeah, yeah. 93, this has been probably 20 years ago at least.
You see how these things stay with you, and you'll remember that for another 20, 30 years. You will talk about
that. I will never forget that concert. You remember, you know, concert. And that's the thing. People, great show, you never forget it. It's like, it was a really great show. You don't forget. People, I don't remember what songs he did. People don't remember what you played half the time. They remember how you made them feel. And I remember
exactly
how you made me feel.
Yes. Yes. And that's actually some kind of a variation of a quote from Maya Angelou. That has resonated for a number of years. It's that an artist is up on that stage, and you can tell that person is wanting to get inside your head and your soul, and it's all about you. It's not about them.
Exactly. I see guys, you know, that play for themselves, and then I see people who play for their audience, play for the people. And there's two different schools, totally different schools there. And it's much more entertaining to me to have somebody play for me or to me than to play at me. And it's just sort of like, here, look at me, or not even care. sometimes incredibly self-absorbed and just obviously could care less whether you're there or not. It's like, I'm doing this, and this is what it is. And if you get
You know, each artist, you're bound to have a little bit of narcissism involved because, you know, music is one of those situations where it makes you feel a little bit like, dare I say this, God. It makes you feel like you've created something out of nothing, and that's a pretty heady experience. So, you know, you're bound to feel some ego involved, but when you're in front of an audience, and Joey, you do this, you are all about going back and knowing that if people aren't getting happy, it's not joyful to play.
No, I mean that comes from you know, and I still do it. That comes from, you know, my formative years. I mean, I would always be paying attention to, and it's part of being able to read your audience and where they're at and where they need to go. I mean, I'm talking about the mood and the vibe of the room, because I go into every show with a set list, meaning here's the songs we're going to play and here's the order we're going to play them in. It's always a lie.
And my guys, I understand.
Because it's going to change, because I'm feeling and reading that room and that audience in that moment and going, well, I thought that song next was a good idea, but we need to play something. And it may be something that's not even on the paper, called up out of the blue, or something that, you know, just spontaneously comes, and you start doing that, whatever that thing is, because that's what they need at that moment in time. And it's about reading them and playing for them, and then reading the energy of the room and the collective, the people that are collected in that space at that point in time. And then going back to the whole church thing, you know, the energy is contagious, and you have to set one person off, and that starts a chain reaction with the audience. It starts with one person. The energy in the room gets spooled up, and you make that connection, that soul communication connection with one person, and they get it, and that energy bubble goes to them, and it spreads to the people that are near them, or somebody else across the room feels that energy and they pop off, and the next thing you know, you've got the whole room lifted. But you gotta read it in real time, and you know, in that moment. At least for me, that's the only way I know how to do it that it works.
Well, honestly, since you've been talking about this, it makes me realize that soul communication is the only way to find soul satisfaction.
Oh, yeah.
So,
absolutely.
You know, and then I was reminded of a song that I'm familiar with, one of my favorite songs on the Get Down Club album. And I would like to play it, because doing an interview in the 3 o'clock hour means that promptly we go off at 4 o'clock. There's a countdown in my ear. And I wanted to get to another side of what you do on this CD, especially since it features my friend Eric Essex on it.
You know what's so funny? I just talked to Eric this morning. I mean, I do a show with him and Michael Ward from New Orleans, who's a violinist, and we do a package thing. It's called The Southern Gentleman, and we're doing the CD's Jazz Festival this year, and doing Winter Park in Colorado as well, amongst other dates, but those are coming up. And I was just talking to Eric this morning. Eric is, I tell people all the time, Eric is my bail money, which is true. If I'm ever arrested, you know how you have people set numbers in your cell phone and you don't know the number? I know
right.
His number.
Oh, thank God. Yes. He would be the kind of person that you would rely on, because you know what? I've met Eric. He is good friends with and works with my friend Tracy Hamlin, who I adore.
Oh, yeah. I know Tracy very well.
Oh, yeah. Tracy is one of my good friends, and she is the consummate pro, and she always tries to strive to have the people around her truly shine. And got to meet Eric, and Eric reminds me of a big rock. He is just the kind of guy that you would rely on. He's very gentle. He's serene. I really like him so much.
Yeah, I mean, he's I put my last dollar on Eric Essex without hesitation. He is the consummate gentleman, consummate professional, and a great musician. I was telling him, man, if I could play guitar, I'd like to play it like you, but since I can't, come on.
Well, I just love this track. This is, and I love the title. Bob Baldwin's on this, Eric Essex is on this, and the name of it is I'm Home. So why was that included on the Get Down Club? Because this is a different feel.
Well, the Get Down Club is about it's a virtual world, and actually, it's a concept that I wanted to create this space where I invited, you know, I say musicians have a Get Down card, meaning that they have that ability to not yes, they can play their instrument, but they know how to do the whole soul communication thing, and that's how you get a Get Down card, to be able to touch souls and move people. And so the people that I asked to play with me on this record are the people that I work with, some of the people that I worked with over the years who I consider to have, you know, great Get Down cards, and I wanted to have them come to the Get Down Club, this virtual world, to create this vibe and energy. And so you've got to have, and the record I'm Home is really about coming home to your significant other, whether you're male, female, or whatever. And just that whole, you know, I tell people all the time I'm domestically blessed. I have a great wife and a great home life. And it's just about that peace, that happiness when you come home to, you know, the home the way you really want it to be.
Wow.
And that's why, you know, that's what this is about.
That is what was intended from time immemorial, to have that oasis just like that. That's beautiful. Mm.
Yeah.
Joey Somerville from the Get Down Club, got to play this for you because it's just going to make you feel so good about enjoying your life. Here we are on Hybrid Jazz. Enjoy. say that was just what we needed. That may be an understatement. Mercy! Every single person in this chat room is going, oh, Lord, yes.
Cool. Good. Then the desired effect is what we got.
Oh, you are not lying. If that isn't the Hi, Honey, I'm Home song, I don't know what is. Man.
Well, that's definitely the intent. That's definitely the meaning behind it. I try to make, when I come up with titles, you know, they all mean something. Because we do, I primarily do instrumental music, you know, there'll be, and sometimes I do songs with lyrics and, you know, but that's unusual. That's the exception. The rule is that there's, it's notes, and sounds, not words, but the notes, there's a meaning behind them. They all come from somewhere and they all mean something.
Well, you know, if you can find out the right title for an instrumental song, you are doing actually more of a service with the instrumental than with a song that has a vocal. If you can enable someone to feel as though by hearing a song, you can physically decompress. Like, I just heard, I mean, I can't hear them, but from what they said to me in the chat room when they were listening to that song, it's as if everybody decompressed. Everybody went, oh, exhale, please. Let me take in the beauty and the peace of this song.
Yeah, and that's what it's about. It's about that feel where you come home, you're like, ah, I'm home. Okay, I'm good. I don't have whatever I had to deal with out there, I'm done with it. I'm home. I'm good. And that's what home should be like. I wish that for everybody. That when you go home, that you go home to a peaceful sanctuary where you can, you know, recharge and rejuvenate and just relax and refresh yourself and feel good. You know, just be happy to be home. I mean, I'm doing this interview. You know, it's like I'm at home right now doing this interview, and I'm. Fortunate and blessed that I have a very peaceful home. I my wife is here, and she does commercial voiceover, by the way. So we get to spend, so she does that, you know. We work from home most of the time. A lot of my recording stuff is here. A lot of her recording stuff is here. It's cool. And, you know, we live in Georgia, which has its ups and its pluses and its minuses climate-wise, but this time of year it's absolutely beautiful here. There's a lot of stuff in bloom, and spring is just popping up, and, you know, I'm looking at the flowers and the red bud, and, you know, waiting for the baby deer to come out of the woods, because this is the time of year when, you know, you start, you know, soon you'll see one, you know, a little spindly fawn pop up, you know, in the next month or so, maybe two, but it's great, no complaints, but I'm home and I'm at peace. And thank you for playing that song, because that made my day. That made my day.
Oh, I'm so glad. And we can actually talk enough about this, because, you know, everybody needs a place where they feel it's their sanctuary, where if the rest of the world is throwing stones at you, you know you've got some place to go where it's safe.
Yeah. And the place, you know, it's physical, but it's more mental, spiritual, how you feel in that space, you know.
Yes.
You know, home can, you know, if it's a big house or a little house or an apartment or whatever, but you're, you know, that place where you just got, you know, you can just get centered and recharge.
Or that little trailer where it's just vinyl and CDs.
I tell you, but I remember it like it was yesterday, and it was one of the coolest places, and I remember how I felt when I was at that trailer. I liked going to the trailer up on the side of the mountain. It was great. It was a great space. It was home for him. And that serenity that he had and peace that he had, you got that feeling when you came to his home. And so it was a great place to come and visit, because it was a serene, peaceful, you know, just the energy in that place was great. Comfortable, wonderfully cool, plush trailer, if you will, up on the side of the mountain. But it was cool.
Well, you know what? One of our wonderful supporters from Jump, who has been listening to Hybrid Jazz for all this time, Griselda, who lives in Texas. She had her sound go out in the computer when you were talking about that artist. And I said, Griselda, even if you are asking me what the name of that artist is, it's what Joey has to write down for me that I can share for you, because when you say his name, I can't figure out how to spell his name.
Well, you know, you're putting me on the spot because I'm not sure if I can spell it correctly, but it's Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan. And I think if you type it in Google and get anywhere close to that, it'll pop up. But it's Nusrat, and I believe that's N-U-S-R-E-T.
Nusrat Ali Khan.
No, Nus. The first letter is N, like Nancy. Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan.
Gotcha.
And I believe that's he was a Qawwali prayer singer. Nusrat,
wow.
N-U-S-R-A-T. My wonderful wife just handed me a sticky that said Nusrat. N-U-S-R-A-T is how you spell it.
Well, thank you, Mrs. Somerville. That's wonderful. Awesome. Okay, now Griselda should know, and we'll do we'll find out some more about this, because if you say that you remember all this time, I wonder what this individual is doing now.
He's deceased. He passed on at least 10 years ago, I think.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah, but he recorded with a lot of other people in collaboration. Outside of his own work, he recorded in collaboration. He actually was signed to Peter Gabriel's label. I believe it was called, well, they did World Music. I can't remember if that was the name of the label or not. I think it might have been World Music was the name of the label. But Peter Gabriel had a record label. And he, you know, had a record label to sell records, kind of like with people like this who were great artists who weren't necessarily, you know, fit the commercial mold, but it was great music, and he had the wherewithal to go, you know what, I think it's great, I'm going to put it out. thank goodness for that. He recorded extensively during, you know, during his lifetime, in the latter years of his life.
If Peter Gabriel taps you on the shoulder and wants you to be a part of whatever project that he has in mind, Peter Gabriel is one of those people who causes a hush to fall on the room.
Well, he's got, and rightfully so. He's an incredible, incredibly talented, gifted artist and visionary.
Yes.
When you hear, and again, I had to, you know, I heard him on record. And that was great, but hearing him live, which, you know, you can't. I mean, obviously the man's, you know, gone on to he's made his transition. But, you know, to be able to experience that firsthand was incredible, incredible. Well, as you said, I mean, I'll remember for the rest of my life, you know, concert experience. No question about it, yeah.
Yeah, there's
incredible.
Just a spiritual kind of energy. You know, you can have all the intellectual elements there, you can have the emotional elements there, but if you have that spiritual connection to people, that is something that lives in your heart until life flashes before your eyes. And we've been talking on the show too, this particular subject. You know, if it is true, and people who have returned after they have been technically given that whatever it's officially called from a doctor, where you have passed away, but you've returned, people have always said that their life has flashed before their eyes, and those pivotal moments come back to you that were the most meaningful. And that's going to be one of those for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow. That's really something.
And
I'm so excited.
Music. I mean, that's the power of music. You know, it's an incredibly powerful medium. It's an incredibly powerful spiritual medium.
And that is why musicians should have just as much respect as doctors, because musicians heal in their own way as doctors do.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's amazing to me, and I tell, you know, musicians, you know, other music, you know, especially particularly younger players, like you never know who you're playing for and what they're going through. And you have a responsibility. You've been given a gift to be able to do this, and you have a responsibility to be a steward of that gift and honor that gift and share it readily and with enthusiasm, because you never know who you're playing for, what they're going through, what they need, how important what you're doing is to them. You don't know most of the time, but just know that what you do is important to humanity, and respect it and deliver it, you know, like you might not play like it's your last night, because it might be, and eventually one day it will be the last time you play. You don't know what it's going to be. It's interesting. I listened to I heard a recording of Clifford Brown on the radio a few weeks ago. It was incredible. And I got the recording, and I found out that what I was listening to was recorded on, it was the last night of his life in Philadelphia, like in 1955, whenever he, you know, he died in a car crash. And he left that gig and was in the car on the way to the next city when he had a car accident and was killed. But he played his face off that night, that last night, and amazingly, it was recorded. But you know, you never know when it's gonna be your last time to play, and you never know what, you know, how much what you're doing is affecting and impacting people. But just know that it is making a difference.
Clifford Brown, so young when he was taken. Oof, my God, just and I guess you being a trumpet. Not only a fan of the trumpet, but being able to play so profoundly well, when you see these greats that have lived, and that particular wonder who died at the age of, what, 25, Joey?
25, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we revered him. I was growing up in Philly, so... You know, the Wilmington, Delaware, just a stone's throw, so he would be back and forth, and I would hear Clifford Brown stories, and everybody said the same thing. What a wonderful guy he was. Wonderful.
It's he's one of those, like, you know, just freak of nature, incredibly just gifted musicians who have had a special voice, and particularly on his instrument, just had that, you know, uncanny ability to make that horn talk like nobody's business. And there are not many people that are like that. I mean, you know, on a contemporary basis, there's, you know, Wenton is a Clifford Brown type of player, in that he's blessed with a prodigious technique. He's an incredible musician. And I would encourage anybody, if you haven't seen Wenton live, you get a chance, just go. You won't regret it. I mean, he's a great guy, and just, you know, just a super, super talented trumpet player, like amazing trumpet player. And this is coming from another trumpet player.
Well, and very passionate about what he does. And it's funny that you should mention about, you never know who's in the audience, and you also have to realize you have a gift. It just struck me the other day. Somebody said this. A couple of people have, but the person who said it first, I think, was Jesus. But it's that the higher up you go, the more servile you must become. And, you know, you see these wonderful artists who are in varying degrees so generous with their time and their gift. Those are the people that make their music the most truthful. Did you ever notice that?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Beautiful thing. Well, you are going to be making so many new fans at Berks. You're psyched, I know, and that's going to be coming up. What is the date on that? I know Berks Jazz Fest is the website to go to.
Yeah, Berks Jazz Fest, which is B-E-R-K-S.
Right.
And I am there on Sunday, April 7th, which is this coming Sunday, at I believe the Crown Plaza Ballroom. And we start at 2, and I'm going to go on, and then Mr. Lee Rittenour with and Michael Lincoln as well.
That's awesome.
Yep.
That's awesome. And I'll bet you, I think that you're going to be playing in Gerald Veasley's club, right?
You know, we're at it's the Crown Plaza Ballroom. So I've never been to Berks before, but it's actually the ballroom at the Crown Plaza.
Is
the hotel there.
Get ready.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that ballroom is in the immortal words of Huggy Lowdown, the shiggity, okay?
Oh,
that
okay.
ballroom is a trip, and you are going to get major buzz when you get in there.
Cool. Excellent. I'm looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to it.
And then you're going to be April 21st at Seabreeze, Panama City,
yeah.
Florida.
Yep. I've done Seabreeze several times over the past few years. Always a lot of fun down there. Great festival, great location. It's just nonstop party. And that's with the Southern Gentlemen. That's with Eric Essex and Michael Ward as well.
Yes, and let us cross our fingers, because last year at Seabreeze, the weather was not too great. I am praying that each day is an absolute blessing for you.
Oh, that's right. I wasn't there last year, and I work with Phil Perry sometimes, and they got rained out when they were there last year. I remember
that's
him
right.
talking about that. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, we're
and
not
going
to have any rain. We're going to be fine.
You're
going to
be fine. And then last year. We don't mention this, the Capitol Jazz Super Cruise in November, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah,
woo-hoo!
You know, we were talking about the Get Down Club, and they've been kind enough to let me host the Get Down Club on the cruise. So
wow.
I'm doing my show, but we're doing a lounge, the Get Down Club lounge, and what I'm doing is I'm hosting late night stuff where there are some up-and-coming, artists who people might not necessarily be familiar with very well, but they're going to be featured with my band on the cruise. So I'm excited about that.
Oh, that is just awesome. And, you are no stranger to hosting, promoting, and booking because you have been doing that in Atlanta, and I know that's why I call you such an entrepreneur, because you have a strong business sense, and that has been fairly successful for you, Joey Somerville.
Yeah, we've been doing well. Actually, we're doing the Mabel House concert series. The Wade Ford is our sponsor. The Mabel House concert series that we started. It was an extension of what I was doing. There's a club that was here called Sambuca, which
yes.
is no longer in Atlanta, but we started doing that with Wade Ford, and the radio station that used to be here, which is the Soul Jazz Station, which isn't around anymore, but we would bring in, featured artists every week, and had it, some of everybody, in contemporary jazz that came in to play for that series, and then after that, the radio station went away. I kept the series going at the club, and then the Steve Ewing from Wade Ford came back and said, "You know what? I'm ready to jump back in. Let's do it. Let's go bigger this time." I was like, "You know what? I like how you're talking." That's how we ended up in Naval House Amphitheater, and so we're the first show this year will be June 8th, and at Naval House, and we're gonna have Phil Perry and.
Wow.
Marion Meadows, my good friend, Mr. Marion Meadows, who I get a chance to, again, he's one of those people that I just have a ball with and just, just a great, great people and great musicians, just a lot of fun. And Jeff Lorber on that show on June 8th. So
that's great.
Exciting. Yep.
That's great. I'm just so tickled that everything is happening for you, Joey, and I know we have to wrap it up, and I appreciate the fact that you could spend all this time with us. Woo! We will see you at Berks, and much more success to you. Things are going your way.
Thank you so much for having me. I look forward to coming back and visiting with you again. I had a great time. Great. I always love talking about music. I love listening to music. I love playing music. I love talking about music, and it's great to visit with people who share the same passion, whether you're a player or a listener. You know, it's always great to experience the music, because that's what it's about, the music.
It sure is, and you get it. I mean, not only the chairman of the board, the CEO of the Get Down Club, but you also get it. So it's just been a real charge to talk to you, and I wish you just blue skies ahead, and they're going to come. They are going to come.
Yeah, and you know, I got to give you a shout out. Thank you for keeping the word out and just keeping this whole cultural community connected, because we absolutely need, you know, we need people like you telling the story and getting the music out to the folks, because we can't, you know, if you're going to depend on the commercial radio world to do it, you're going to be it's not going to work. It's not happening.
I know.
And
thank
that's
you,
okay.
Joey.
That's okay.
Yeah.
It's our culture. It's our music. It's our resource. It's up to us to keep it alive. And that's the musicians, the fans, the programmers, the promoters, and we all have our parts to play to keep this stuff happening, because we need it.
Joey, thank you so much. We've got 5 seconds. God bless you. I'll see you soon.
Sooner than later. Thanks
all
again.
Right. Thanks, right. Joey. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I think we might have blown our time. We'll see you next Tuesday on Hybrid Jazz. Thanks to everybody.